Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Doctor's Kitchen. Recipes, health, lifestyle.
Doing exercise for 40 minutes, time for me, time with no distractions, time where you sweat and you push your body and you're doing something which is completely unrelated to work. I love it. And I desperately try and do it every day, but not necessarily intense every day, even just like a 20-minute walk or something where I'm moving my body and I'm not attached to technology. That's the dream.
Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. The show about food, lifestyle, medicine, and how to improve your health today. I'm Dr. Rupi, your host. I'm a medical doctor. I study nutrition and I'm a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle as medicine. Join me and my expert guests where we discuss the multiple determinants of what allows you to lead your best life. Entrepreneurship has a real glamour to it these days, with images of global startups such as Tesla, Lyft, Gymshark, Monzo, and more. But what is startup life really like? And is it as desirable as people make it out to be? Today, I'm thrilled to welcome along two good friends of mine to the show, Zana Van Dyke and Natalie Glaze. These entrepreneurial, passionate ocean lovers wanted to create a business which was a force for good, a business that aligns with their morals and actually serves the planet. To fulfill this, they co-founded Stay Wild Swim in 2018, an ethical and sustainable swimwear brand made from regenerated ocean plastic in the heart of London. And since its launch, it's quickly become a leader in the sustainable fashion industry with a radically transparent supply chain, showing that you can consciously produce clothing without compromising style and quality. I personally know just how much effort goes into sourcing the raw materials, the fulfillment process, the seasonless slow fashion approach, and it's incredible to have seen it grow. It's been featured in Vogue, showcased at London Fashion Week, Stockton Selfridges, and approved by Anna Wintour, someone who I didn't actually know who they were, I must admit, until I had to look her up. But Stay Wild Swim has seen huge success in a short period of time, and it's set to continue shaking up the fashion world. But what are the costs of starting up such an incredibly successful company on the outset of it? Beyond the glamour and the success, I wanted to know what the day-to-day is like, the stresses, the sacrifice, and how do these young entrepreneurial women stay grounded? What is their secret? So in today, we spend a long time talking about the start of their journey, their history, how they both connected and how they grew the concept of what became Stay Wild, their rapid journey to success thus far, and the features across all the magazines that I mentioned, including the biggest social media account in the world, what stresses they've encountered on their short journey, and what their coping mechanisms are that they've learned along the way. And the reason why I ask this on this particular show is because I think there are a lot of transferable coping mechanisms that yourself as a listener and myself can actually learn from, regardless of whether you're interested in startup or not. There are a lot of things that people have to go through during the process of starting your own business, and it can be exceptionally stressful. We also talk about Zana's personal illness that led her to understand the value of stopping and taking time for yourself. And we also end up with advice that both Natalie and Zana have for listeners to cope with anxiety and stress, regardless of whether you're starting up something as a business or just trying to deal with the current time we live in. I think it's really important to contextualize the information that we share on the podcast with real life stories. And I really hope you enjoy listening to this inspiring one and you find it motivating and useful. And the struggles and uncertainty of startup, I think, is a particularly interesting lens to look at lifestyle medicine, particularly during a pandemic. I'll summarize some of the best bits at the end, best bits of advice that I have, including some top tips and books that I find exceptionally useful during this time. So without further ado, the first 45 minutes is really about their journey and how they started Stay Wild. And then we get into a bit about their lifestyle and how they cope with the daily stresses of a business. I hope you enjoy it. Zana, Natalie, thank you so much for coming in. I really do appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us. We're very excited.
Yeah.
So excited.
Yeah, I'm
glad. You've been a long-time listener, mate. Long-time listener.
I know, yeah. You told me, which is great. And it's great to have you, Zan, particularly on the pod, because we have our sort of entrepreneurial chats every month or so. And I've been wanting to have you both in because I think this aspect of entrepreneurship and, you know, the trials and everything that you see on the gram is not really a version of what is reality. And so I think the aspect that I want to focus on with health and wellness is how you guys cope, given that you have built a business over the last couple of years and now going into what we've just been through over the last 6 months and probably will go to. But before we get into that, why don't you introduce yourselves to the audience and we can get going from there.
So I'm Zana, 28, keep thinking I'm 27, but I'm not. I am a blogger, content creator, and the co-founder of Stay Wild Swim.
I feel like I should start with my age now. Like, that's what we do. My name is Natalie Glaze. I'm 28.
Yeah. Lovely age, that.
The older one of the
you
two.
You make me
us.
Feel really old. I'm 35, just to put it out there.
But you don't look a day over 25. I am the co-founder of Stay Wild, working alongside Zana. Always feels a bit weird calling myself an entrepreneur, but I'm an entrepreneur. I kind of talk about my life online, so kind of do the blogging side of things, which is how me and Zana met, talking about sustainability, business, and about to launch a new business as well, sustainable jewelry business. So yeah, fingers in many pies, but sustainable swimwear is what brought me and Zana together, and yeah, that's why we're here today.
That's immense. Let's start off with that, Drew, because the word entrepreneur, I think, now has like quite a cool edge to it. It's quite kind of the hip thing to do, like everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. But what do you think about when someone calls you an entrepreneur? Like you said, you're like, you know, feeling a bit embarrassed to call yourself an entrepreneur. What is that term actually mean to you guys?
I think it's a funny one because I think we're all brought up to not kind of not feel like you're bragging about what you do and not feeling like, I don't know, there's certain words which have certain connotations. And although me and Zana are entrepreneurs, we're businesswomen, we're business owners and very proud of that, it is that thing of you tend to, and I do it a lot, like talk down what you do. And I feel like I have to learn to embrace like success and doing well, like doing running a business and running it. And I'm just like, I'm an entrepreneur. But I think it's weird because I had this conversation the other day, how entrepreneurship has this very glamorous kind of aspiration. Lots of people want to be an entrepreneur. But when I think of being an entrepreneur, I think of just like slog, hard work, graft, and actually the less glamorous side of it. So I think there is this kind of glamorization of people wanting to be labeled an entrepreneur, but actually the hard work and the graft behind it is not actually that glamorous. When people say, I want to be an entrepreneur and run a business, I'm like, have you thought about this? Are you sure? Do you know what comes with this?
I also think it's just very British to be self-deprecating. And I think there's also an element, well, first for me, I don't know about you, Nat, of imposter syndrome, where I don't think I'm worthy of the title of entrepreneur because I feel like that's like a very a very high standard to set yourself. And I'm like, I don't think I'm an entrepreneur. I'm just somebody who does this thing and has some swimwear and has a great time and runs these businesses. But I think entrepreneur, yeah, I have imposter syndrome about that term. And I feel, and also self-deprecating, I feel embarrassed or cringy or brag, like I'm bragging or being arrogant to call myself an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I'm just somebody giving it my best shot.
Yeah.
Giving business my best shot.
Absolutely, yeah. It's strange, isn't it, that now, I totally agree. I think it's like a British thing. Like we're quite self-deprecating, trying, you know, put ourselves down a bit. But it's a weird thing how the term entrepreneur has almost evolved over the last few decades. Because I was born in 1985. And when I was growing up, my kind of like idea of an entrepreneur was someone who was selling door to door. Or was, you know, something that my dad did, you know, he started his own business and, you know, it was just on the corner. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think of with entrepreneur. But now it's got that ear of like, you know, you're a billionaire or you're Elon Musk or, you know, you're doing something in tech or something that scales across the globe. Whereas in reality, it is that graft, that small business mindset and just creating an atmosphere or creating a business that you can use to support your own families and feed your own, you know, your children, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Completely agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Word. So you guys met through the whole blogosphere stuff. Talk me through that.
So we met through the gram. Actually, I think we probably met some sort of overhyped fitness event in 2015 with green juices and yoga. I feel like that was probably the vibe, wasn't it, Nat?
That was our vibe.
And then it was totally our vibe. And then we went on like a detox Ibiza retreat together. We got put in this tiny room. And I think that was just when we realized, all right, we're going to be mates now because we're like,
we didn't have a choice.
We shared this tiny space together. This was literally 2015. This was like 5 years ago. And then we both kind of went off in our separate directions in the blogosphere. So we first connected talking about fitness and green juice and all that sort of stuff that was very trendy back in the clean eating days. And then we went off in our different directions. We both ended up of our own accord talking about sustainability online. And then Nat saw me do a tweet. I did a little cheeky tweet. This is in probably 2017, saying, oh, imagine if we could make something out of ocean plastic. Because I had just been educating myself about ocean plastic. I'd started doing beach cleans. I was really trying to use my platform to raise awareness of this issue. And then I did this tweet saying, I wonder if we could make something out of ocean plastic. And then Nat just slid into my DMs like a slippery little dolphin. And she said, oh, let's go for some brunch, avocado toast, still basic. And you literally rocked up with like a PDF.
No way. Yeah, you came up with like a business plan or?
Well, bit of backstory to the sliding in the DMs. So obviously, like Zana said, I'd been learning about sustainability and the ocean plastic and the kind of devastating effects of that. And it was so interesting that we'd both kind of taken that turn in our career and what we were passionate about. And then I can't actually remember when it was, but I heard about ocean plastic being used in material. And then I remember I was away with a friend and I just said, I wonder if you could turn that into swimwear. That's such a lovely story. I wonder if you could take it out of the ocean and turn it into pieces which are then worn into the ocean. And then I started to do a bit of research, started to gather information. I created a huge Excel, did a bit of back research. And then I just thought, this is a beast. Like, this is a really cool idea, but I don't think I have enough time. I don't know enough. I haven't got enough resources, but I had quite a lot of research. And then it was like 2 months later, I saw Zana's tweet and I just thought, I've got lots of research. I've done quite a lot of like legwork here. I wonder whether one, it'd be interesting for her if she's going to go ahead. But then it like reignited that interest of, but that was a really cool idea. Maybe I should just see if she'd be interested in doing it together because we've clearly got a similar ethos and we knew each other. I knew how hardworking she was. I thought, you know what? Actually, she'd be a really great business partner. So then I thought, why not make a business plan, like PDF, and basically pitch it to her, but disguise it under avocado toast. So I basically bribed her. I was like, we should go for brunch. We haven't seen each other in ages. Let's catch up. Yeah. And then I just got out my laptop at the end. I was like, so there's a really cool business idea here. And I think that you'll really love it. And, you know, I would love to hear your thoughts. And then we kind of started discussing and it was very basic what I'd put down. It was like a skeleton idea. And then it it just kind of seemed to spark a conversation. And then it was a bit, it was very much like, it was never an official decision. Like, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's go into business. It was more of a, that sounds cool. Should we do a bit more research? Actually, that's a really good idea. Maybe let's just start an Instagram. I don't know when we said we were going to go into business together, but somehow we ended up here.
Yeah, there was never a moment we both said like, okay, then this is the business. We both just went, let's just keep having meetings and like talking through our ideas. Yeah. Let's make a Google Drive. Let's pop our research in there. Let's make a spreadsheet. Yeah. Let's make an Instagram account. Let's like just reserve the website domain. And then it just kind of kept going and kept going. And then next thing you know, we were in a factory making sandals. We were like, okay then, as soon as we have a swimwear business on our hands.
I feel like it just escalated. We had this kind of, it almost like took on a life of its own. Yeah. And suddenly we were like, okay, we own a swimwear business. Here we are.
Yeah, definitely.
Great decision.
I mean, that makes it sound very easy. We, like, to put it out there, we have zero background in fashion. So the big leg up that we had is that we're both social media content creators. So we knew we had a platform on which we could launch a business, which is something which so many people struggle with, getting their product to an audience. We already had an audience there and an audience who engaged with the message of sustainability. So we were like, this is a really amazing opportunity. This business makes sense. And we have people who we think will actually like this product. But then we had this massive gap in there of experience in fashion. So that was like a massive learning curve. How do you find a factory? How much material do you need? Where do you get stitching from? Oh my God, what about labels, packaging? How do you keep it carbon neutral? How do we get a web developer? Like every single element of it, we had never pretty much done before. So yeah, it was just a huge uphill learning curve.
Every day I remember just messaging each other like, oh my gosh, we haven't thought about this. Oh God.
Hygiene liners.
Yeah, so basically you legally can't sell swimwear without a hygiene liner on, which is kind of the protective seal
of
at
course,
the bottom.
Yeah.
People to be able to try on. We were like, we want to create a sustainable swimwear company, but they're all made from plastic. And this was, I feel like this was maybe a month before we were supposed to launch, and we just were like, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do? So we just got into a hole of Googling, researching, reaching out to loads of people, and found this one company which could do it from tree pulp. So it's all that kind of compostable hygiene liners. Found it, and it was like 100 million times more expensive than any hygiene liner out there. But we're like, we're gonna have to do it.
Yeah.
Because, and I just think it was stuff like that just kept popping up. And then we were just like, okay, right, let's just Google hard for like 4 or 5 days and just be in this little hole of research. But yeah, it was very much a learning as we go, making up as we go along.
Our list of things to do, we had like this big list and a spreadsheet of things you had to do before you launched a business.
Never got shorter.
It never got shorter because we'd tick a few things off and be like, oh, hygiene liners, oh, these tags, oh, hang tags, safety pins for those. And then like, it never ends.
So naive.
Yeah. Well, but this is the reality of business when you're doing it, because it comes from an idea and it evolves, and then you're like, oh my God, I haven't thought about all these different things. But before we go into that, because this is fascinating, because I didn't know anything about this, even though we've been chatting for ages. But Natalie, do you have a background in entrepreneurship? Well, like when you were growing up, did you ever envisage having a business or, you know, fending for yourself?
I definitely didn't have a background in business or entrepreneurship. I always saw myself working in media, did media at uni, went and worked in agency. So I had a bit of a background in marketing, and I always knew visual side of things was very important to me. And then obviously created social media account, went down that side, which I suppose in a sense is running a business. Like it is running a business online. So we kind of had learned that side of things. But I did always have this side of me that thought, I'm going to own a business one day. And I had loads of really random, awful ideas. At uni, I was going to launch an activewear company and did all these drawings, had loads of samples delivered. Me and my friend were going to do it. And then we were like, this is really hard work. Absolutely not. So I always was coming up. And then I wanted to launch a brunch cafe once.
Okay.
And then we like found a location.
Like legit
didn't we
ideas?
All though? I always wanted to launch a brunch cafe.
I was going to have like marble and wood, and it was going to be so basic. It was, honestly. And then and then someone was like, "Do you realize how hard work it is to run like a cafe?" And I was like, "Yeah, no, I don't want to do that anymore." Yeah. So I think I always had that kind of. I just don't think I'm a very good employee. I wasn't very good at being in like a 9-to-5 job. So I was always looking for how can I create my own career. I never thought swimwear because I didn't have any fashion or design background. Like, I, you always just assume, you see a fashion business and you assume that you have to go to a fashion uni or have some kind of background. So that never really was an option.
Yeah. I hear a lot of entrepreneurial journeys and I always think to myself, it's almost where opportunity meets passion. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity to do something was obviously with Zan, and you have shared interests. And that passion really comes through. And that, if you don't have that passion, you wouldn't be able to, you know, do the endless hours looking for that hygiene piece of the garment. Yeah, exactly. That is sustainable and is in line with your mission as well. So it's quite amazing. And Zan, did you have any entrepreneurial sort of thoughts when you were growing, or maybe like in your family or?
No, you know what? So, you know, Rupi, I studied to be a speech therapist. So I studied to be a speech and language therapist. I was going to go into the NHS and I was going to specialise in stroke rehabilitation, hopefully work in a hospital. So I had kind of just seen myself working in that industry and following that path. And when the opportunity arose to do social media and to work for myself in that way, I definitely thrived working for myself. I think because I'm a little bit of a workaholic, and that kind of gave me a place in which I could thrive. And I think motivation is never ending when you're working for yourself on your own business and your own project. And when you're working for somebody else, sometimes it can be a more of a challenge to ignite that motivation to benefit somebody else. And if it's something that you're passionate about and it's your business, and ultimately the harder that you work, the more it's going to succeed. I found that that was a situation in which I thrived. So then when this opportunity came up with Nat to work on our own business, I just thought to myself, like, this is something which aligns with, number one, working for myself, but number two, working on something that I'm really passionate about and turning something negative, ocean plastic, into something positive and actually making it profitable in a business. So like a business which is profitable, but also supports people on the planet, which is very rare nowadays. So it kind of felt like a really unique opportunity, but I definitely don't have a background in entrepreneurship, but I have blagged my way through life and worked very hard. So hopefully that's carried me well up to this point.
Definitely. I mean, for you in particular, you know, you had Zana van Dijk, you have this big social media following, you have brands clamoring at, you know, at you left, right, center. There's almost a path that is, I don't want to say easier, but it's a little bit more sort of like, you know, it's in front of you. Whereas it sounds like to me, particularly from these, you know, short stories I've already heard, this is an uphill struggle. So how did you make that conscious effort to concentrate a big portion of your time on something that you don't know whether is a given?
I think a lot of that, and I'm going to be really honest here, was naivety. And I always say ignorance is bliss. And in those early days, I have to admit, Nat, we were quite ignorant. We were ignorant. We did not know what was coming. And we threw ourselves into this business, like all guns blazing, like this bit, like business. We're women. We can run this business. We've got this. Like, this is going to be easy. And then as we've said, it was a bit harder than we anticipated. And I think you're very right. Like social media, there's this one path you can follow, which is the easier path. Like brand deals are a great income and producing social media content is incredible. And it's a really beautiful creative release. But I think for me, I do find a purpose in that. But I think this business is the ultimate purpose. And I like to think that what I'm doing with my platforms now, with the Zana van Dijk social media platform, is helping to push Stay Wild as well. It's all interwoven together because I think Stay Wild is a business that's actually going to have more impact than I personally am going to have. Stay Wild is going to pull more plastic out of the ocean and help change things in the fashion industry. Like the things that we've achieved with this business, the people that we've spoken to, the people that we've influenced with this, like all the stuff at London Fashion Week, which I'm sure we can talk about later. I'm just like, I couldn't have done that without Stay Wild. So I'm more than happy to push on into this world, which is completely alien to me, because it feels like, it has more of a purpose.
And that talk me through the timeline. So this infamous deck that you that you sneakily showed Sam, what year was that?
17, wasn't it?
Yeah, it'd be about 3 years ago because we launched the business just under two.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably about three. And then I probably started that deck about the year before that. But I say deck.
Yeah.
It was like a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, yeah.
With like a few pictures and some stats.
You know, the sort of firelighters to this, you know, fire now. But So you're having these meetings, you're building up this Google Doc where you're taking off checklists and all that kind of stuff. Was there ever a point where you guys sat down and had like a grand vision of what you wanted to see, what you wanted to create, or has that come a lot later?
I think we always had a purpose. Like when we, all the conversations we had at the beginning were, we want to create something that's more than just swimwear. It's more than just a product. We wanted to have, we always say this, wanted to have like a business with a bigger purpose than that. Not only, I think we always were very aligned from the beginning with pieces that had a purpose, that used sustainable materials, but more than just sustainability. Like we always knew we wanted our pieces to empower women. We always had a very clear understanding that, and this was, both of us have always been on exactly the same page of showcasing a variety of women's bodies, making sure that people felt good when they came to our page. Also, we always knew that we wanted it to have like an education piece, that we've always had blogs, resources, directory posts of other businesses. And that's all been very clear from the start. And I think we, the thing that's changed probably the most is we always knew what we wanted our why to be, our essence of our business. And we knew what we wanted to achieve and the feel of our business. But maybe our, I think as we've learned and as we've grown, our designs of our pieces are probably, when we first started, we created pieces which me and Zanna just wanted to wear to the beach. We were like, oh, that would look great on me and Zanna. Like, let's just wear that. And then I think now, as you get to know your audience, we've had to really learn how to look at things from more of a design perspective. Think, what are the story behind these pieces? Like, what do the colors tell? How will that fit on different bodies? How will that look on different women? What's our niche in the design world? Like, what makes our pieces stand out when, like, we're stocked in Selfridges, but when you go on to the shop floor, how can you recognize State Wild? Those were questions which we probably hadn't asked ourselves. And that's been something that's really developed over the last 2 years. Like, we've got such a clearer, if you look at our first pieces, they were very simple. Whereas now you can really recognize our pieces. Whereas I think before it was just like a simple black one piece, simple kind of coral one piece. So I think we've always had our why and our mission, and that has never changed. We probably, maybe it's evolved and we've added elements, but we've always had a very clear mission. But our, yeah, we've definitely become better designers.
And I would say one thing that just came to mind just then from the beginning is we always said we were very aware that we were novices and this was a new business for us and we didn't know if it would succeed. And we were also very realistic that it might not succeed. And we just said, even if this fails in the first year or 2 years, we just release something we're proud of and then we can close it down and be happy with what we did.
Yeah.
And like, we literally said that from day one. We said, we will push this and we will try and grow this. But like, fashion is really hard. The vast majority of new fashion brands fail. So we were just like, okay, we're just going to go into this, give it our all. But as long as we're proud of what we've created, we're happy.
And I think that's what we've done with every decision. Every decision we've made, we've always said, is this something we'll look back on and be really proud of? Even if it made us no money, even if it did close down, it's every single decision that we've made throughout the business, it's always been made thinking, will we look back at this in a year's time and be like, I'm really proud of what we've done at each step? And I think we have achieved that.
Yeah,
I'm really proud of what we've done.
I mean before we get into the story of the start in 2018, when you launched the business, you founded web development, just a few of those things that I've picked out here of the way you describe the business with purpose, your why, your story, they almost could be elements of like a Simon Sinek talk. Did you have any sort of early influences of how you told the story of your brand and how you actually went through the sort of mechanism, the process of describing that story? Or was it just something that, you know, you were just picking up along the way and realized this is something you have to do?
I think it came naturally because it was our passion, and the business naturally has its own story. I think the nature of taking fishing nets from the ocean, transforming that into material and putting it on women's bodies that they can wear in the ocean, I feel like that naturally in itself comes with its own story. So for us, it just flowed naturally as the business progressed.
And I think one thing that we said right at the beginning is, although maybe it is to detriment of our, like, we haven't got any background and we aren't business ladies or business people, and we said, let's talk about that. Like, let's be open, let's engage people. From the beginning, we always said, we don't really know what the best choice is. So let's ask our customers, let's ask our Instagram audience, let's get their opinion and feedback. And lots of people have always said, was that a marketing technique? But it was like, it was purely, we didn't really know the answer. So we thought, you know what, let's just see what they say because they're probably going to be buying it. And I think as we've grown, I have definitely like watched more business talks and listened to more podcasts and kind of have been like, okay, well, that's clearly our why. Yeah. And kind of understanding what fitted where, but the actual journey of it has been very natural. And I think a lot of that has been, we were probably storytellers before. We had our own platforms. We always told a story of kind of ourselves, our lives, what we were doing. And I think actually that really helped us with the business. So we looked at it from a storytelling perspective, getting our audience involved, getting them to help. We always say that they're our third team member. So it's like me, Zana, and then our audience, you probably know better than us.
We're blagging it, guys.
Yeah, we'll be like, guys, help us. We don't know what we're doing. You help choose this?
Well, to be honest, I think, yeah, your experience, in that sort of social media world that's evolved so much over the last 5 years has definitely helped you create this really trustworthy brand that people actually have a true connection with because they've seen it grow. I mean, I've heard it grow before it even started and seen it grow like incredibly. And that transparency, I think, is really endearing. And I think more brands now are trying to adopt that method, almost like catching up with it. And we'll talk about competitors and all that kind of stuff a bit later. But so you've got a web developer. How do you do the designs? Did you do that yourself or...?
So your mum sketched some bodies up and then we like drew things on the bodies and that was that, wasn't
I was
it?
Telling this story the other day. We actually went to the factory. I literally think we emailed about 200 factories and they were like, bring your designs along. Brought along parchment paper, which we unrolled. We're like, these are the designs we want to create, like hand sketched pencil drawings. And I honestly think they laughed at us. We need a digital drawing and it's called a CAD. Like, have you got CADs? And like, and I remember just being like, what's a CAD? And I was like, well, these won't do. And they were just like,
can I just say, our first design, when they made the first sample, it looked like a Borat thong. It was genuinely, I'm going to cry. It's so funny. It was absolutely hilarious. We have these pictures of us in the factory on the first sampling day and it's actually like wearing a Borat thing up and over your shoulders. And the biggest wedgie, just completely unfunctional. You couldn't walk.
That's what happens when you do hand-drawn drawings and take them to the factory. They were probably all laughing about us, like in their meetings, being like, those girls who came in with their rolls of
parchment paper.
What era do they think they live in?
So it was only then that the penny dropped that you actually had to create digital versions of the design that you wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God.
And you have to, like, we went back and forth on those first samples and yeah, it was seriously hard work getting those done from the Borat thong through to a fully fledged one piece that actually functioned.
The thing is, factory language is like a whole other language. Like the words they use, the technical like conversations, we'd go in and they'd be asking us stuff and me and Zana would be looking at each other like, I actually don't know what they've just said. Like, because it's a whole technical language we had to learn. And we were like Googling stuff, like, what does that term mean? And like the way that kind of fittings and samplings, get it right, the technical terms and the way, like, it's not just a visual, like that needs to be a little bit more to the right. Can we have a bit more coverage here? Can you move this up? It has to be very specific. And I think that was a journey. And I definitely think that we've learned a lot of like kind of technical language and know a lot more about factory speak. But honestly, like they would say stuff and I'd literally be just completely blank, like, I'm sorry, can you explain that? Like, what does that mean?
I think fashion is much more technical than we anticipated. Even just like, if you want a material to sit a certain way, it's like, how is it stitched? How is the elastic stitched to the fabric?
Yeah, and what's the tension?
What's the tension that's put through that? And you don't realize this until you're 2 years into a fashion business. So I definitely say it's been a massive learning curve, but it all turned out.
And do you still use this factory?
We've moved twice.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
We've moved a few times. The first, because we didn't really know what we were looking for. We knew we wanted it to be in London. We wanted it to be local. We wanted to support local community. We also wanted to be able to go in because we thought there's no, like, we don't know what we're doing. We want to be able to pop in and then send us like an email and go in and say, what did that actually mean? Like, can you show us? So we think we knew we wanted it to be London. We knew we wanted it to be ethical. We wanted to see the working conditions. We also wanted to go in, but we didn't really know what to ask for in terms of like, can you show us examples of previous work? Can you show us like, what machines do you use? This is all stuff we've had to learn. And as we've learned, we've realized, okay, we need more technical elements in terms of machinery. So let's look for a factory specifically in London that has that. So I think we've had to, as we've learned, we've know what we're looking for in a factory better. Yeah. So we're still in London, but we've moved because the first one wasn't very swimwear specific.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And whereas now it's a lot more technical around swimwear and fit and...
Yeah. And our current factory is just great in terms of sustainability and they're really striving to do better and they've got really innovative technology being brought into them and I just feel like they really align with our values on every sense.
Like they're like zero waste, like they won't work with any brand unless they're sustainable and they're always coming up with ideas of how to do things better.
Yeah.
So I think for us it's really crucial that we have a business, like a factory that we can work with that has the same ethos because typically like the fashion industry and factories, it's really wasteful. There's a huge amount of waste just in like the sampling process, huge amount of single-use plastic and hangers, whereas now we're able to, that was a bit of a fight with the first factory to be like, can we make sure it's not wrapped in this, can we make sure it's not done like this, and they were a bit like, but why, everyone else does. We're like, yeah, but that's kind of not the point of our business.
Well, they're trying to charge you more money to do things more sustainably.
Yeah, we're not going to wrap it in that, so we'll charge you like £5 extra a wrap. Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's more helpful.
And so when you first started off, did you get stock or do you invest in getting like loads of inventory and then try and set it up that way? Or like what was the process?
So we bought a lot of stock. We took a complete guess at how many of which size and which colour to get, didn't we? Like, look your finger, stick it in the air, here we go. So ordered a selection of each style in different sizes. And then we put them all on the living room in Natalie's house.
My house was like, the fulfillment centre.
We did counting, we did quality check on the living room floor. We sat on the sofa and we launched that evening on the laptop and like sat there watching the orders come through and then desperately tried to pack, print and ship from your living room floor.
Because that's hard. Another thing that we were really, we thought, oh, we'll build a business, we'll do all this. And then it was like the week before, we were like, oh, we have to pack these things and send them out. And like, how are we going to do that? And how are we going to, we were handwriting people's addresses on, like the labels. Handwriting the notes. Like, I remember Zana sitting there handwriting the notes, which went in these orders. And she was like, my hand is literally going to fall off. And my whole, and at this point I had a flatmate and it was like up to the ceiling worth of like stock. And I remember her like just being like, is this going to be a long-term thing? Like, what's the deal here? And then we moved, because it basically took over our whole flat. So then we moved it to my parents' house and my mum and my sister were our packers and they took it to like the post office and they did everything. And then it got to a point, the business grew to a point where my sister basically sent me a message and said, I can no longer do this. Like, I need a life.
Really?
This needs to go. But so we managed to do it within the family. But oh my gosh, it's really difficult packing stuff. It was really stressful as well because it's so much pressure because you're packing it and then you're thinking, wait a minute, did I write the right address on that? Oh, I don't know. Like, if I send that out wrong. And it was just like hours and hours each day of just packing orders. So that's the bit which you just kind of don't really realize.
But now we have a nice fulfillment center.
Yes, we do. We have other people who do that. And I'm so, so grateful because I'm like, that's such a hard part of the business.
So I'm guessing the response was good. Like, did you sell all your inventory or?
Yeah, we sold out in a few weeks, I think. And it was complete guesswork. And I feel so lucky that people, because obviously we were a new business. And I think that takes a lot of trust from customers to go, I'm going to invest in this new business. These two girls have no idea what they're doing. And they've talked openly about that. So this product could be a pile of rubbish, but actually they trusted us, thank goodness. And yeah, sales are really good. And that was interesting because then we were able to go, oh, that was interesting because these sizes sold the most or this color sold more than the other one. And then from there, I feel like it was almost like our first year, it was like a testing year. Just audience feedback, understanding what our audience wanted, what their feedback was to the styles, being able to improve on fit, being able to improve on
and
shape.
Definitely like with sizing and inventory, that was a huge learning curve, realizing our audience, what sizes do they typically order, how many of each size we need to be making, and just because in the beginning, as I said, you're just guessing how many of size 10, how many of size 18 do I order, whereas now we kind of know our audience, we know the sort of women that buy our swimwear, and we know how many to order of each size, etc. So but that was all a massive learning curve, and a learning curve that we did in public. We did it like on social media, we documented the whole journey, and it definitely felt I think it felt nerve-wracking to launch this business when we were so new to it, and to have this platform where if people didn't like their pieces, they could share it online, they could tag us, other people could see it. It definitely, yeah, it was a scary
added
time.
Pressure. We were like nervous wrecks.
Yeah.
The week of launch, I don't think I slept a wink. I think I was so nervous. And we were just like sat on the sofa about to press live. Like, should we do it? Oh, counting down, like actually nervous wrecks. Mm. And we were probably so excited up to the launch. And then by the end of the week, we're just like bags, like packing all these orders. Like, what have we done?
Wow. And since then, so you had a successful first launch and then... You know, how did you iterate? I mean, you were talking about the audience feedback and you know, a little bit more considered with when it comes to sizing. But how have you elevated the brand thereafter with the designs and everything else?
I'd say moving factory was a key thing we should probably mention here, because when we moved factory to one that was more swimwear focused, well, the quality just was absolutely unrivaled. So that was definitely a huge change. And then also, as Nat said, our first designs were very simple. They were block colours, simple, clean shapes. And we had to try and decide how are we going to stand out. And we realised that panelling was something that we wanted to bring into the brand and have that as kind of a defining feature of the brand. So I think that was something which, when we brought it in, sort of completely changed everything. And people loved it, having these flattering, sort of double-lined, strong, flattering again, but they are very flattering. I did design them. flattering, double-paneled bikinis and swimsuits that really do the job and are functional. I think, yeah, the paneling was the game changer.
To add to that, I think when we launched really quickly. Like we kind of came together, had the idea, it almost snowballed. We launched, and then we were able to sit back and go, okay, right, we've launched stuff. We know people want to buy it. Where do we want our business to go? And I think actually one thing that really changed kind of the way we looked at things is Selfridges contacted us before we'd launched and said...
Like, before you launched?
Yeah. So they found us on Instagram, and we got this email, which I thought was a hoax. I literally remember messaging Zana being like, read the email in the inbox. Like, I don't think it's a legit email, but Selfridges want a meeting. So they... basically run a program called Bright New Things, which is supporting sustainable young designers. And they were like, we'd love to have a conversation. We were like, we haven't got any products yet. Are they sure? So we went in, and it was all confirmed before we even launched that we were going to be the Selfridges Bright New Things swimwear brand, which is amazing. And then we went around Selfridges shop floor, and I just remember being like, how are we going to stand out? We've got two really simple designs. How are we going to become... that you recognize our pieces? And I think although we would have got there, I think that added pressure of knowing that we had to stand next to some of the biggest swimwear brands you've heard of, and brands which have been around for years and has such a strong identity, it almost made us go, okay, it almost fast-tracked us to getting to our kind of branding like point that we are now, because we thought, I think that added pressure of knowing that you're going to be on like in the biggest, like one of the most biggest luxury department stores. And we thought, our pieces have to be so good and have to stand out. So we went back to the drawing board. We thought, what's the feedback? What do we want our brand to be? And that's when we started coming up with the ideas for like the paneling that we added, the zip. We always knew we wanted to be sports luxe, but I think that kind of got us to that point. So probably having that added pressure, and it was a really short turnaround as well. They're like, wait, so Bright New Things, and we want to launch in this month. And we were like, that's like 6 months away, and we haven't got designs, and like, but with your new collection. And we were just like, oh my gosh. So that was a bit of a like scrabble it all together, but actually we were able, I think it really made us push ourselves further than we ever would have. We probably would have been a slightly slower pace, but then we were able to launch and be like, look at these pieces, I was so proud of those. So we launched with two. And then 6 months later, we launched with our like proper collection, like our full, I would say, yeah, it's like our first proper collection. And then that was what was in Selfridges. So it was like basically we had like fast forward button put on us to be like, right, you have a whole collection to launch. Come on. In Selfridges.
Keep up.
And me and Zander were there like paddling underwater, like, oh my gosh.
Were you doing that all yourselves? I mean, you both come from creative design backgrounds, yeah, with the design element, or did you have to enlist help from other people, or were you literally just doing this all off your own back?
Yeah, we did the design. We actually came up with the designs and like colors and shapes ourselves, but then we had to enlist help to do all of the digital drawings, because that's like on a whole other program, which people like study to learn.
Yeah.
So we were like, we can't do this. So yeah, we luckily found someone who was really amazing, gave us like really good advice and had a background in swimwear. So we came up with the designs. We're like, this is what we want them to look. And he was able to translate that into a digital drawing and actually bring it to life, which was really great. Yeah, because I think that's like a year's worth of like learning how to use that software, which we just didn't have time to do.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that you recognize where you have not weaknesses, but you have elements of the entire package that need a bit of help, and you can almost like jigsaw it together. I wanted to ask about British Vogue and British Fashion Week as well, and how those kind of came about, because there've been a number of steps on your journey that I know about, like the feature by Instagram as female entrepreneurs, etc. How did those things come about, and how have they affected you?
I mean, they've affected us in a very positive way. We've had a great time. So we were contacted by the British Fashion Council about coming to London Fashion Week, and we were both shook because we were just such a new small brand, and to think that we would be invited to come and take part in such a prestigious fashion event was absolutely, to be frank, mind-blowing to us. So we rocked up. We were told that we would be given this like tiny area with like one rail and a little bit of space next to it. So it's an exhibition space, right? So we're given this one rail and a tiny space. Then a few days before, they kind of upgraded us to a really big space that we would have to fill. And we didn't know how to fill this space. So we were like, what do we do? We've never been to a fashion exhibition. We now have this massive space and we have nothing to fill it with. So we blagged that as well, didn't we, Nat?
Yeah, most of it was my furniture from my flat.
Yeah,
it was just like taking so many random bits. I remember when we turned up, just looking around at everyone else's exhibition space and being like, oh my goodness, we're so amateur. Like, people had like set designers because it was a legit
thing. People
had
things drilled into the ceiling and like hanging from the ceiling.
They emailed us the day before being like, do you have any set designers coming? Like, do you need to make any kind of actual like builders, like physical things like going into the wall? And we were like, oh, we just had a rail. And then it was like last minute trip to like, I think I went and got a plant.
We went to that studio we used for a photo shoot and asked if we could borrow some of their furniture.
Like, begged them last minute, like, can we come pick up some like furniture? Because they had some really beautiful pieces. Managed to be fair, our space looked really nice.
I was pretty chuffed with it.
Yeah, we've managed to pull together this. And people were like, oh, I love your space. And we were literally like, oh my God, we actually blagged this. Like, I don't know how we managed to just like stuck some things on the wall. And we're like, here's our swimwear space. But that was incredible because we hadn't even been going that, I think it was less than a year, maybe.
Less than a year.
And we were obviously able to meet every press, every basically everyone in fashion.
Anna Wintour.
Yeah. And then what was really incredible, we were the only swimwear brand there. So we were having lots of kind of big names, and obviously me and Zana have no background in fashion, so people be like, oh my gosh, did you know who that were? We were like, no.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because when you told me about Anna
to be fair, we didn't know.
We did.
Devil Wears Prada. Everyone knows.
I remember telling I think it was my sister, and she was like, "Do you not know? How do you not know who this person is?"
That was the one person. I remember she walked around the corner.
She comes with a crowd.
Literally, the whole place goes silent wherever she walks. She came around the corner and there was just a wall of people taking photos and it went silent in the room. She came around the corner. I was chatting to someone. I turned around and Zana was there pointing at me, being like, come talk to her. So we went over and we were like chatting, and she was so lovely, but we were both just a bit like starstruck, a bit like, oh my gosh, asking all about the pieces.
She complimented the fabric.
Like the paneling and the story and stuff. And then when she went, it was like this lull and we both looked at each other. I was like, oh my gosh,
you know who that was?
That was definitely a career highlight, because that was, like, she only visited one brand in the whole exhibition.
Wow.
And that was us.
I don't know why she chose to come to us, but we were really, obviously, like, absolutely mind blown and so thankful that she did. And then since then, I think a lot of that we've had a bit of a snowball effect. We've been featuring a lot of Vogue. Like, Vogue have been really supportive and had a lot of features there. And I remember when before we launched, there was a few things which I was like, if we ever get into Vogue, I'm literally going to retire. Like, that's it. That's my career goal done. And then we got like features. And then they just kept coming. I think we've been in nearly every Vogue.
In the past month, I think we've been in four.
Yeah. Wow. And then it was just like, Yeah, that was mind blowing. And it doesn't ever get less exciting. Like, we've been running this business for 2 years. Every feature, I'm like, I need a copy. I need to frame it. I'm bringing my mom. Like, mom, I'm in Vogue. Like, so excited.
But I think even like a real highlight for me at London Fashion Week was when the chairman of the British Fashion Council came over and she bought some pieces. Mm. And because she said that she really liked them and she physically bought some. And I was like, if you are the chairman of the British Fashion Council and you're saying that you like our pieces, I feel like that's a seal of approval.
Yeah, because it's like, and industry, like, that's like people.
A pat on the back, because we do have imposter syndrome. We do feel like, why are we here? Everybody else has this background in fashion. And then when she comes up and buys a piece and says that she loves it, and you're like, must be doing something right.
Yeah. To get people within the fashion industry complimenting your designs and then being like, where did you guys study? And we're like, well, we didn't.
Nowhere.
We kind of made it up. So that was amazing. Cause you just, like you say, you look at your pieces and you think, we like them, but I don't know if anyone else will, you know, and then actually to get people within the fashion industry. And that's where the Instagram team got in contact with us because they saw us at Fashion Week. And then, because they had like a pop-up space in the fashion exhibition. And then I think they must have seen the pieces. We got invited along to meet the head of fashion. And then it kind of, we built a relationship with them and they were really supportive. And then they remember they sent us an email just being like, I got a separate email from one of the girls being like, the most exciting email has dropped in your inbox. Like, prepare yourself, and read it. And we were just like, because they basically then... they were doing a founders focus on, was it 6 brands around the world?
Across the world.
And we were the UK brand, and they did like a whole feature on our story. And they were like, so we're going to have a team fly to shoot you.
From San Francisco.
Yeah. And we were just like, what is going on? So yeah, it's definitely been a lot of highlights. And that for sure was one, because like, they have the biggest page in the whole world. And we were just like, what is happening?
That is insane. Yeah.
I still can't believe it, to be honest. Every time I think about it, I'm like, what? How did... Wait, what?
Like, literally when we say these things, I'm just like, what has gone on the past few years? It's been a wild ride.
It really has.
So, as you both know, this is a health and wellness podcast. You know, what I try and do is inspire the listeners into how they can take care of themselves, how they can eat well, but also live well. And I think... your story paints this beautiful picture of how you came up with this idea. You're very naive, to use your own terminology. And, you know, it appears to be success after success. In reality, stresses, you know, there's grind, there's financial insecurity, a whole bunch of other things. What I really want to nail down into is how are you coping, and how have you coped over that 2-year period? It's been a very short time in, you know, as far as businesses go, but what have been the biggest pain points, and how have you developed a thicker skin to get through those?
How long have we got?
As long as you need.
Well, it's definitely been an interesting journey. I think when we first started, we had no idea kind of the stresses of running a business. Well, I had no idea the stresses of running a business. And I think because you're so emotionally invested, it's your business, it's your baby, it's your thing you're putting out into the world. Actually, the emotional stress that goes with that, because you just want it to succeed, you want people to like it. And I think I never realized how stressful that is. Every part of you wants this business to do well. So when we launched, I literally didn't sleep. I was so nervous, and you're just so scared of it not going well. And yeah, for the first year, definitely I let my health slip. I like basically lived off coffee, didn't sleep that well. I think a lot of business owners, and then that's what happens, they burn out because they're not looking after themselves. They're working. And I've had so many conversations with people who run businesses, and it's like, you have to recognize that and then be like, actually, no, I need to look after myself. So the first year we definitely had a lot, because it was so exciting and it was so fast paced, and you're working in this absolute whirlwind that your business becomes the number one and then you're like number two, you know. And I think the second year I've definitely been a lot more conscious to be like, make sure you're getting enough sleep. Even stuff like the first year, I used to check the emails all the time. So now I don't have any notifications on. I won't look at it from a certain time. I have my phone on airplane mode in the evening to the mornings. There's certain things which I've just had to, it's almost like I've had an intervention with myself to be like, you have to like put these things in place to look after yourself. Make sure you're not drinking over a certain amount of coffee, a day. Make sure you're getting enough vegetables in. Make sure you're drinking enough water. Like, the world's not going to end if you don't check your emails in the evenings, you know, because otherwise you can just become consumed by your business. And then before you know it, your health has suffered. You're really stressed. You can end up like suffering with anxiety and all the things that come with that really high stress lifestyle. And then you hear people who end up being like, I can't do this anymore, and walking away from their business because they have almost like imploded. And I think I recognized that in myself in the first year. I really recognized like, you can't keep going at this pace because otherwise something's going to give and it'll probably be you. And obviously the business is not going to go anywhere. Like, what we're aiming is to have a business that's a long-term business, and a long-term, it's here, it's going to hopefully be successful for many years to come. So it was like, I had to, yeah, like intervene with myself and be like, right, these are things you're going to put into place to make sure you're exercising because that makes you feel good, making sure you're getting outside. Like, I got a dog, and obviously I've always wanted a dog, but I'd like be able to go outside and take him on a walk twice a day out in the like parks and stuff. That's really, really crucial. So I've had to definitely be quite conscious with myself. And I think it's easy to fall down the rabbit hole of just like work. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I'll have weeks when my balance slightly goes. Yeah. And then I text Hannah like, I'm having a meltdown.
I was going to say, there's been two things which I think we've done, which has really helped the business. Number one is offloading to each other. And number two is delegating. So the great thing about having a business partner is not just bouncing creative ideas off each other and bringing two different perspectives to the table, but also having a support system. Like, Nat texted me a few days ago saying, I'm really overwhelmed with this certain thing. I don't think we're going to be able to do it in time. And I said to her, nobody's put this deadline on us except us. So nobody else knows about this deadline, so we can push it back by a few days if we want to. And it's just having each other to say, to me, like, Zana, do you think we can push this back? Should we do it like this? How do you feel about that? And vice versa, being able to talk to each other, I think is key, because you can get trapped up in your own head about the business and the choices and am I doing the right thing? And the second thing has definitely been delegating. Like, in the beginning, it was just us. And then as we've grown, we've had the capacity to be able to delegate things to more people, which I think has definitely helped. Because I think customer service, which Nat handled for a long time, which is savage.
Yeah.
As soon as that was taken off Nat's plate, I could see a visible difference in you as a human being. So we got a customer service girl, and that was like changed our lives, especially Nat's life. So it's been able to delegate has definitely been a massive part of our business, and being able to, as you said, we know our weaknesses, we know our strengths, and being able to actually put some more time into our strengths and find people to help support us on our weaknesses in the business has definitely been vital to our wellness.
Mm, yeah, we're so lucky to be able to do that as well.
I find the partnership thing particularly interesting. One of the traits of YC, Y Combinator in San Francisco, they're a tech accelerator, is that they try and encourage people to pair up. And I wonder whether it's because, you know, you have co-founders who can offload to each other, who can share responsibility and then delegate, and then also keep the other person in check. I wonder if there was ever a point where, perhaps not between you guys, but anyone else in your extended family or, you know, close friends, that actually had to say to you, you know, you're working too hard, there's too many boxes in my house, or there's, you know, you're not taking care of yourself, you're not sleeping well, you know, this is all encompassing as businesses can be.
I mean, my boyfriend, Ant, bless him, has sat me down on multiple occasions and said, and not just about Stay Wild, about work in general, and just been like, is it worth it? Because like, I'll be a wreck. I'll be crying. Nat knows I love a cry. Mm-hmm. I love a cry. So I'll be having like a little meltdown. I'll be crying. And Ant will just say to me, is it worth it? And that question always makes me realize, yes, it is. Like, of course it is. I love this. And I love Stay Wild. I love my other work. But it's, yeah, Ant often has to kind of ground me and like check in with me, like, this work is for a reason, and if it's not worth it, I have to ask myself why. But so far everything that we've done has been 100% worth the stress and toil that we've been through.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question to ask yourself, you know, is it worth it? And whether you actually, and being honest here, you know, whether if it wasn't worth it, you'd have the confidence to actually walk away and say, you know what, this isn't for me, I'm not allowed to do this. I don't know.
I think it's really hard. I think I was speaking to someone who ran a business and then sold their business and decided to walk away. And he was like, it's the hardest thing I ever did, because it's a pride thing. Like, you've spent this time. And he said that lots of people, you almost become your business. And I think that's an issue, is like, sometimes you become your business so much that there's that blurred line of your identity and your business identity because you put so much into it, and then you become that business in a sense. And he was saying it's hit for him, and I really recognized, I was like, that's really interesting, and that's kind of, it always makes me think, make sure that, you know, you have enough time apart for, and you're not just working, because he was just like, I found that I didn't have an identity without my business, like once I lost it. Yeah. So it is something that you have to really check in with yourself and ask the question, is it worth it? But then it's also asking the question, like, obviously we're not planning on going anywhere, but is there anything that you could get help on? Is there anything that you could delegate? Is there any way that, like, could you push that launch back a little bit? And like, that's not really not going to affect it, but it might help your workload. My boyfriend's done a lot of that, being like, pulling me aside, being like, you know, why don't you just calm it down? Or why don't you take a week off? Like, put a week off in. Yeah. Nobody's, it's not going to go anywhere.
Because I told Nat I was taking a week off, because I've been online like the whole of 2020, and I was like, I'm just going to have a week off. And I said, you need to have a week off. And you were like, please. So you both just took a week off at the same time. It was the best week ever. But we both hadn't had that time. I didn't had a week offline in almost 2 years. So it was just the most incredible, refreshing period of like that I needed. And I think being online, especially when your business is online, like my Zanna van Dijk side of stuff is online, Stay Wild Swim is online, everything is online. Taking that time to step back, disconnect, and just kind of live life without being trapped in your phone and in your emails and everybody knowing, like, there's a general consensus, I am offline this week. Yeah. You will not hear from me. That is the most amazing feeling, and I hadn't done that in far too long. And now I'm kind of vowing to myself after that period, and also watching The Social Dilemma, I am now saying to myself, I want to have like even just one day off a month where I'm completely offline, ideally two, just where I'm completely offline and I'm not doing anything on my phone, anything on email, anything on a laptop, just to be truly present would be amazing. So I'm hoping I could do that going forward. I'm not saying I'm hoping. I will do that.
Yeah.
Going forward.
I'll hold you accountable. I'll message you the night before. You better not be online tomorrow. I'll be watching.
Yeah. There's two things that you guys have said. One thing that really resonates with me is the notification. So I definitely have those off. And I don't check my phone for the first couple of hours of my waking day. So I'm not just automatically immersed in, you know, whatever it is, whether it be WhatsApp or emails and that kind of stuff. Emails I'm addicted to. Out of everything, I've managed to cut down on Facebook and Instagram and all the other social media sites, but email is particularly addictive. And after watching The Social Dilemma, I realized, you know, there's functionality there that actually wants you to stay on email. So the notifications for email are off. And I think also having a period of time where you completely disconnect for a week at a time is amazing. It's almost like a luxury. But I wonder, you know, given the financial stresses, the stresses of being customer service, and, you know, even having a personal brand online, it's like doing customer service. You've got to reply to comments, you've got to, you know, reply to DMs and, you know, ignore trolls and all that kind of stuff. How do you deal with the day-to-day? What are your stress coping mechanisms on a day-to-day, given that you're running so many different things and a business that is growing?
Exercise. For me, like fitness, many years ago, fitness was like it was a job, and it was a bit of an obsession. I think often when you first get into fitness, you kind of just get hooked. Whereas for me, fitness now is a release. And I sometimes, because of my schedule, have to do it first thing in the morning. But my favorite thing is doing it like finding time in the afternoon or the evening to kind of relieve the stress of the day. Like that just feels amazing, because I've usually built up quite a lot by about 4 or 5 p.m. And if I can then go and train, and you can't check my phone, because usually my phone is some part of the workout, whether it's a timer or I'm playing some sort of fitness app. So doing exercise for 40 minutes, time for me, time with no distractions, time where you sweat and you push your body and you're doing something which is completely unrelated to work, I love it. And I desperately try and do it every day, but not necessarily intense every day, even just like a 20-minute walk or something where I'm moving my body and I'm not attached to technology. That's the dream.
I would say the same, definitely some kind of movement. But one thing that's actually really changed the game for me, and I was on a panel and this girl said, I put my phone in airplane mode in the evenings and I don't take it off until an hour after I've woken up. And I was like, oh, that's a really good idea. And I started doing that and it's probably been maybe the last year. And honestly, it just changes my mornings, like being able to wake up and not have any notifications, not check my phone. Like some days, if we've got a launch, I'll look at it. But I just notice the difference of that, like as soon as you wake up before, just being bombarded with millions of things and then immediately being like, oh my gosh, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, add this to my to-do list. Actually having that slightly more peaceful start to the day, it just helps so much. And it makes you realize you don't need to check your phone straight away. Actually having that moment of peace and being able to, like, I just make a cup of tea and I put some skincare on and I like ease myself into the day. And I think that really helps. Having a dog helps, like that helps, just because it's like you're just gonna go and cuddle them and you're not gonna be checking your emails when you're cuddling your dog.
No.
So yeah, movement, dog.
I'm gonna throw in there the notifications for me as well. Yeah, because I remember, so I was talking to Dr. Chatterjee a couple of years ago and we were recording a podcast with him, my own podcast, and he in the podcast had said about notifications, and I came out of the studio and I took my airplane mode off my phone and it just went bring, the whole phone just went off and I literally felt cortisol rush through my veins and I was like, this is the turning point, the notifications are off. And it started off with just having email off and just having WhatsApp off, and now it's like everything is off. The only thing that's on is phone calls. If you want me and it's urgent enough, you will call me. And the other thing is, I was quite poorly last year and I definitely realized when I was poorly that like the world can wait. So it's even just little things. So like it might get to 8 p.m. and I'll look at my inbox and I finished my emails at 6:30, but still 10 more have come back. And I'm like, why are you emailing me at this time? And it's so easy for me to get sucked back in just to try and tick them off before the end of the night. And I check in with myself and I'm like, the world can wait. Like they shouldn't be expecting a reply from me at 8:30 at night. And if they are, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give that to you. So I think it's just kind of knowing that the pressure that I put on myself to do everything so fast and immediately and tick off everything on my to-do list today is only the pressure that I put on myself. And I try and, like, even when I look at my to-do list for the day, I try and categorize it into what has to be done today and what I'd like to do today. Because if my list is so long and I'm telling myself I have to do everything on that list, then the feeling of overwhelm kind of floods through you. So I'm trying to release that expectation and allow myself to sometimes just not get every single thing done, which I would have never have done like a couple of years ago. So that's definitely a big change for me.
I wonder if you mind if we double click on that actually, because I know obviously you had a big event that happened to you. Yes. In the middle of nowhere. For the listeners who don't know, I'm sure you explain it. But I wonder what impact that had on your thought process with specific regard to your own health and well-being, your mental well-being and the business as well, and how that fits into it.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a changing point for me. So, and a turning point. So I was in the Maldives, January 2019, and my bowel twisted out of nowhere. This is a very long story, condensed very short. But I ended up just having emergency surgery. They cut me open from above my belly button to just above my pubic bone. It was quite a big incision, 4-hour operation, emergency surgery. And then I spent a few months recovering. And it just completely shifted my mindset. Like, number one, everyone around me was so compassionate and I was just like, God, humans are great. Like, number two, I couldn't exercise properly for over 3 months. And I was somebody who had been a personal trainer, who had been like very into fitness. So I think like having that forced rest and reset kind of shifted my perception of exercise. I used to see exercise as something that I did because I was a trainer and I was into fitness, and exercise then became something which was for recovery, to get stronger, to feel good, for the mental benefits of it. Like, I used to be able to only really walk for quite a while. So for me, walking was my new exercise, and getting outside and being in nature. And yeah, exercise changed from just being burpees and sweating and lifting 100 kilo deadlifts to like just moving my body and enjoying moving my body. And I also started doing breath work as part of my recovery. So I had to do like box breathing for 5 minutes every day, because basically if you have abdominal surgery, correct me if I'm wrong, Rupi, your lungs, like your capacity can reduce because of your scarring, etc. I don't know the reasons why, but the capacity of your lungs can reduce. So I was told to do breathing exercises every day. And I have kept that up every day since my surgery. So it's coming up to almost 2 years later and I still do 5 minutes of breath work every day, which I think has just been amazing for me. So yeah, it's gone from like my whole physical approach to fitness, as well as like my mental and finding breath work. I used to be a meditator, but now I actually find breath work is more beneficial for me. So
yeah,
it shifted quite a few things.
We've had a couple of people on the podcast talk about the mechanisms behind why breath work can have benefits to your mental health and your physical health as well. And I'm a big proponent of breath work from a gut point of view, from a mental health point of view. I think there's so many benefits of it. And it almost has like this immediacy effect. So you immediately feel better straight afterwards. And if you're the kind of person that struggles to switch off like I am, breath work just gives you a little bit more direction in what you're doing. So, you know, breathing in for four, out for four, whatever the strategy is for breath work. And I can imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, that's had a beneficial effect on your relationship with your business, be it your personal brand and your startup as well.
Yeah, I definitely think it has. And as I was saying earlier, it's releasing the expectation of I have to do everything, I have to be everything. Like with Stay Wild, Nat was incredible. Like this was a really important time in the business and I disappeared off the face of the earth. Yeah. For like basically the first 6 weeks of recovery, I was just like in a hole. And Nat just took everything on her shoulders and I had to release control and just be like, you smash everything, Nat, I'll just be over here in a bed. And I think that was really good for me. I am a massive control freak, not just with Stay Wild, but with my own business, with everything that I do. So I think I just had to completely release that. And actually, just to bring it to 2020, with COVID, that has also been beneficial for me. Like last year, I had to release control for 3 months. My whole life changed. All my plans that I had were cancelled. And we've had something similar this year where everything has been cancelled and our lives have changed for months. And I feel like I had a bit of a preparatory phase in 2019 where my life was put on the back burner. So yeah, I'd say my approach to business now, I think that period in 2019 and my health being compromised definitely helped me. I never wanted to go back to how crazy I was before that. And then COVID this year has also, we both say, gave us a little bit of a moment of pause to think about what elements of life do we want to bring back in? What elements of life, when things slow down, do we want to pick back up? Which I think has been refreshing and important.
Yeah. How was it for you, Nat? That period of time where your co-founder disappeared off the face of the earth and you were
sorry about that.
Tasked with the business. And
well, for me, it was just important that Zana had her time to recover and that she was going to recover and she knew that I was just going to be able to, like, I didn't want her to feel any guilt. And obviously it was such a...
And I never did, so thank you for that.
Yeah, and it was just one of those times where it was like, the least important thing was the business. The most important thing was Anna's health and her being able to recover. And for me, it was just a no-brainer. I was just like, it's cool. You take your time. Like, obviously, I'm here for you. And I remember like going round with like donuts and like taking chocolate
and
over.
Samples.
Yeah, and then come over and be like, I also have some swimwear samples. And like, obviously as a co-founder, and that's the joys of having a co-founder. It's like you are all like, Zana's also my friend and she's also someone who I've known for so many years. And our health and knowing that we have each other's back is that's the most important thing. And like being able, and for the business, it was just like, well, of course I'll run it. You don't have to worry about it. Like, we both trust each other's judgment. We both trust each other's decision making. She knew like that I would be able to do it and she'd be able to trust my decisions. And it was just like, I'm going to make a success of it and we're going to smash it. Don't worry about it. You'll come back. Everything will be good. And yeah, the most important thing was Zana being able to recover and know that she didn't have to worry about Stay Wild. Like, Stay Wild was going to be fine.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. No.
It's an amazing time right now because there's so much uncertainty, which you've experienced prior to lockdown and everything. And I wonder, there's a lot of people who have perhaps been made redundant or an extended furlough. And it looks likely that we're going to dip into a recession. But it seems that to mirror what happened in 2009 and in the 80s as well, it's also a time for opportunity. So there may be some people, perhaps not everyone, particularly those who have got so many responsibilities to juggle, but this could be a time where people start thinking about starting their own business and starting, you know, to take control of their future, whether it be starting something themselves or getting involved in something. And I wonder if you guys had any tips for people who are thinking about starting their own, whether it be in
fashion or food or education or whatever industry that they're most familiar with or passionate about?
I'd just say just start, because I think for so many people, you have that idea, you have that passion, you have that thing you want to do, but you're so afraid to take that first step. And for us, as soon as we took that first step, I mean, Nat had already had the PDF, but as soon as we made that Google Drive and that spreadsheet, that was when the snowball started, because we'd just put the pen to paper. We'd just taken that first step. So I think stop holding yourself back and just start, and don't be afraid to get it wrong. Like, I think there's definitely things we've done along the way where we look back and we're like, oh, definitely could have done that better. But at the time, that was all part of the journey, and we've grown and we've learned from it. So don't be afraid to make mistakes and watch your cash flow. But
yeah, that is a good one. That's
Watch your cash flow.
I think one thing, we got a bit of advice before we launched the business, was whatever you launch at first is not going to be perfect. You know, you're never going to have the perfect business, the perfect product, the perfect idea. But if you have enough kind of passion behind what you're doing, your kind of product and your idea will catch up, you know. So for us, you can get stuck in a hole of trying to make everything, every single element of your business perfect. And you hear a lot of it, of people saying, I've wanted to launch this business for 3-4 years, but it's not quite right. And I've been working on it. And then they feel like they've almost lost the opportunity. And I think, like you said, I know a lot of people who are coming brainstorming new ideas and using this time, maybe they're on furlough, they have a bit more time, and they're going, okay, I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to launch this business, and I'm going to do it this time. But I think it's that whole, don't let yourself hold your ideas back. It's not going to be perfect. Like, we put out a business which was far from perfect, but we were able to learn, adapt, listen to our audience. And I think that was such a crucial bit of advice, because we wouldn't have launched for another year. And then by that point, like, when we launched, it was such the right time for us to launch a business. Like, David Attenborough just done his speech about ocean plastics. So it was like the perfect time. We saw that David Attenborough do his talk, and I was like, we have to launch. Like, it's not going to be ready, but actually, that's fine. Like, that's the joys of a business these days, is you can evolve and you can kind of learn these things, and it kind of gets better as you go. So yeah, definitely don't wait until it's perfect. Learn on the go. Google everything. I think everyone's like, how do you find this? I'm like, Google. Like, how did you find that? We Googled it. How do you do this? Googled it. Like, we literally built our business on just Googling how to do this. What does this word mean? How do you do this? Like, I think we even probably did how to launch a swimwear business. Yeah. Like, you know,
I literally Googled that. Yeah. No word of a lie. I Googled, like, how to launch a swimwear business checklist. I love a checklist.
Thanks to Google. Like, we wouldn't have a business if it wasn't for just being able to Google every single thing.
That's brilliant. Honestly, I resonate with that so much, because I'm in the midst of building. So I suppose, like, even the Doctor's Kitchen, it took me 4 years to actually muster the confidence to actually press launch, because I had the idea back in 2011. I was going to do these videos and all this kind of stuff. And even now I'm going through this process. Okay, I'm launching a new business at the same time, this application that does your shopping and matches your recipes to nutrition goals and delivers your shopping and everything. So even that has been like a 2-year process, because I've been fearful of the response and it not being 100% perfect. But I think the way you guys have described your journey is empowering for a lot of people, hopefully listening to this as well. I wonder if you could share some of your top books, podcasts, inspirations when it comes to startup, or things that perhaps have helped you along your way.
Ooh, do you know Holly Tucker's podcast?
Yes.
Oh, what is it called? Do you know what it's called?
I can't remember what it's called.
Something of Inspiration.
Conversations of Inspiration?
Something like that.
Is
Conversations
that
of...
Yeah, so Holly Tucker is the founder of Not on the High Street, and she has a podcast focused on small businesses. I mean, she does interview some larger businesses as well, but she really is a champion of small businesses, and her podcast is all about highlighting them and what they've done to get where they are. And I just think she has a lovely, friendly approach to everything. And also, she asks nitty-gritty questions. Mm. She asks questions like, how did you get funding? Mm. How did you do this? How did you do that? And you're like, that's what I want to know. Yeah. So yeah, I do really like that podcast, definitely.
I would say, yeah, I've definitely listened to a lot of those. I think we sent like each other those podcast episodes. Listen to this.
This one.
Yeah. They packed it in their front room as well. Yeah. I think another favorite of mine is How I Built This by Guy Raz. That is such a great podcast. And there's so many episodes on there which I've listened to and I've been like, that's such a valuable bit of advice. Or hearing this brand which you thought was, I don't know, I'd have visions in my head of a brand, and then you'd hear them talk through the struggles of the first few years and how they made some really crucial decisions or how they built their business. And I found it really, really reassuring, because you think that all these businesses, and I'm sure people look at Stay Wild and think, oh, they've had like this great journey and it looks really amazing on their Instagram and stuff like that. But actually behind the scenes, it has been really hard and really hard work. And I think that's the same for listening to both of those podcasts, is you hear these brands which you just have in your head as these amazingly successful brands, and they're like, it was the hardest thing. I nearly quit 3 times. I sent everything out from my front room. I made loads of mistakes. I did this. And you're just like, okay, I'm not the only one. Yeah. So yeah, both of those two are gold dust, I would say.
And the Well To Do podcast as well.
Well To Do.
Is it Well To Do London?
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course. Lauren Arms. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I think her podcast is great. She has some really good ones. I mean, it's focused on wellness, but you can apply a lot of the stuff that she's spoken about to fashion, I found. So I've listened to a lot of her episodes.
Yeah, those are like two of my favorite podcasts. <as well. laughs> I think this is really helpful because, you know, putting a perspective on the health and wellness and how you're coping with the stresses, you know, for people, regardless of whether they're starting their own business or whether they're just trying to get through life right now, I think those are super helpful. So I just wanted to end with what the vision is going forward. Like if you even have started on that vision board, or whether it's something you're still putting into construction.
We always just say two words, world domination.
Just simple.
That is genuinely what we always say. We're like, what? There'll be a crisis. Well, what's about it? And I'm like, don't worry, it's going to be world domination soon.
That's how we end most of our messages. Like, don't worry, I'm going to take over the world.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we just have to say it to each other to like be like, it's okay. It's okay. We'll take over the world. Promise.
We do have some like big projects coming, because we have realized that swimwear is a seasonal item. So we have a solution to that, and we are exploring that. We're not going to say what it is just yet, but yeah, we are making a bit of a pivot and launching a new branch of the brand, and it's really, really, really exciting, and it's completely out of our comfort zone. You know, we just don't like to be in our comfort zone, do we, Nat?
Yeah.
So we're going to launch something completely new. So why not?
Watch this space.
Watch this space indeed.
I really hope you enjoyed that wonderful story and the podcast and everything that we discussed. I think there were just so many useful bits. I want to round up some of the key hacks and coping strategies that I think are going to be useful for most people. Ones that I find particularly useful personally are turning off notifications and airplane mode activity in the evenings and the mornings. I have a wake water meditate mantra in the mornings where I don't engage in my phone or emails or social media or whatever that is, and I find that a particularly an absolute game changer. Just giving yourself the space to really look inwardly and introspectively, I think it's very, very important. Being able to offload to someone, whether it be a close friend, a family member, In a measured manner, I think is absolutely game changing. It's great to see founders as co-founders, because it naturally has to be that way. You have to be comfortable with someone to be able to offload in that way. But you know, it could be a partner, it could be a friend, whoever you trust implicitly. I think it's very good to offload and to talk about struggles, whatever they may be. I think also one of the things that I've made habitual ever since my condition back in 2009 is exercise. And one of the things that I think is really effective when I speak to patients is just promising yourself 60 seconds per day. Now, I know that it sounds pretty ineffectual to only exercise for 60 seconds a day, but just that promise that you make to yourself that you're going to do running on the spot or star jumps or lunges or even a stretch for 60 seconds a day, just giving yourself that promise means that you don't post any 0 days. This is something that we talked about on a habit change podcast I did earlier in the year with Heather McKee. And something that I've read from a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear. I think it's a fantastic read and definitely one that is on my essential reading list, which I'll talk to you in a second about in terms of books as well. Stressors, you know, I personally find meditation, but breath work can be very, very useful. And I think if you have a busy mind, like I do, breath work just really gives you that lovely framework by which you can concentrate on just doing something very consciously. It's certainly something that has helped me. Books wise, apart from James Clear, Atomic Habits, I also find the 5 a.m. Club. It's an incredible book by Robin Sharma, who's also written a number of books, including The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. And I think particularly for entrepreneurs, it's a great read. And the podcast, to reiterate how I built this, one of my favorite podcasts. It's stories of startups and the undulations of what it's like to build up a business. But I think it's interesting to just hear the human stories of ups and downs, and hopefully that gives you a little bit of solace, whatever you're going through at the moment. But those are my top lifestyle tips. I really hope you enjoy this episode. We're going to continue with the series for the next couple of weeks, and hopefully you can pull out some inspiration, some motivation from what we discuss. I will see you here next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.